Hi, I'm Glenn, also known as the Male Practitioner, and today joining me to talk practice is Sarah Collins, who's an early years practitioner at a nursery in Huddersfield. Sarah, hello.
Hi, Glenn, how are you?
I'm really well. So we kind of met, I know, earlier on this year before things got really, really super mad, although the day was quite mad because I'm going to let it be known that we were stood in a room full of early years practitioners of all sorts doing the actions to Baby Shark.
Yep, that's how we bonded over Baby Shark.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Who doesn't? But yeah, I mean, it was a great event and it was so good to meet other people. So it was kind of organized through Twitter, that event, wasn't it? So
it was
early years leads, which we went to. It was a great day. So what, like, you know, like yourself, we kind of bonded over various different things and there was lots of elements of discussion in that, wasn't there?
Yeah, lots of interesting things about sort of professional representation, and, you know, say about the curriculum and how early years works and how everyone's experiences are similar but also very different as well.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think that is kind of a key phrase, similar but different. It's like, you know, we all work in early years but we all approach it slightly differently, or we have different boundaries or different parameters that we have to work within, I think. And it was good to experience that, but also to feel that although we work slightly differently, we're all trying to reach the same goal, but we all have the same passion, I think. That was really good.
Absolutely, yeah. And that comes through from being online, you know, more often than not, thankfully, on Twitter. You know, it's lots of positive parts to it. But, you know, then you can make those friendships in real life and then make those connections in real life as well, which is what the Brewed Leads really, really brought together. So that was good.
Definitely, yeah. And I think as well that, like you're saying, it was, I think the difference between sort of other social media with Twitter is that it's more about that discussion rather than, oh, I'm going to steal that idea and use that in my setting. It was about, like, hang on, I'm having one of those moments here. Somebody put this into perspective for me. Or, oh, have you seen this article from DfE or something like that? So there was a lot. There's a different slant to using Twitter than, I don't know about you, but I find it different. I use other social medias and I find I use Twitter in a different way to anything else.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I do a lot of my CPD through Twitter and, you know, let's say there's professional discussions and the various hashtag chats that happen sort of 8 o'clock on a Tuesday or a Thursday or, you know, 6:45 on a Friday morning or whatever they are when everyone's getting up to go to, well, when they used to get up to go to work at that time.
Yeah, it's a nice day. So before all of this nonsense, tell me a bit about your background. How did you come to be in early years?
I got into early years by accident. I was at a university in London doing my QTS qualification and had a really bad teaching practice. So I gave up with the QTS part of it, but carried on with education studies. Mm-hmm. And whilst I only had to go into university for two mornings a week to do my dissertation, I got a part-time job in a nursery and absolutely fell in love with the early years from there. So I worked in a baby room with one of the big chain nurseries down there. Mm-hmm. And then moved back to my hometown and applied for a job in a nursery there just to get some money coming in whilst I reassessed what I was going to do for my future. Mm-hmm. And went back and did my level 3 or diploma in preschool practice, as it was then, with the Preschool Learning Alliance. And went back there and then moved up to Yorkshire in 2001. And then kind of carried on from there, worked in a nursery for a little bit and then wanted a bit more because I sort of got a bit more into the quality side of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the research stuff has always fascinated me. Mm-hmm. So I then worked for National Day Nurseries Association in their quality assurance department there, and then went to work for Wakefield Council as a development officer, again working with quality, and that's where the big sort of quality and planning and that kind of thing, the passion kicked in a bit. Mm-hmm. There, and sort of working with nurseries pre-Ofsted, post-Ofsted, and that kind of thing. So yeah, the anti worksheet brigade and the running in the moment kind of thing started there and then. So yeah,
you're singing well to me there with anti worksheet. I mean, I have to admit, I'm going to confess slightly. I had a colleague once upon a time that lived and breathed worksheets, and it was like, if you're in preschool, you must be doing worksheets because it's the only way you can see your work. And it's like, I got so fed up with it. I said, look, we need to cut down on worksheets. I was being nicey-nicey to start with. In the end, I gave up and just hid the folder.
Yeah. Well, my first nursery when I moved back home after university, we used to have daily worksheets and we'd literally bring the children over to the working table and they'd have to do one mark-making one. So it was either a straight line or then they'd progress to a wavy line. And if they're really good, they'd progress to the zigzag line. Ooh, and then lovely. There was a number one. They had to trace the number And if they could trace over the number, it obviously meant that they understood what a number five was, just because they can trace over it. And then there was cutting activities, and we had to draw the three sides of the triangle and colour it in. And I look back now and think, what was I doing? But I didn't know any different to challenge
it. That's the way it was. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You just do what you manage, especially when you're unqualified and you haven't got that experience. So thankfully now, that's long gone in my dim and distant past. But yeah.
I think we've all been there. I think so. Definitely. Yeah. I think it's one of those rites of passage as an early years practitioner. You have to have that moment where you think, this worksheet's a pile of old rubbish. Bin.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think it's like you kind of talked about it, like the kind of like the quality and the sort of the planning aspect as well in your life. And I know like prior to this, we kind of had like email discussion and you were talking about that light bulb moment for you when it kind of like sort of in the moment sort of planning. So
yeah,
what was, describe me this light bulb moment, tell me more.
It was when I was doing I've done my EYTS qualification at University of Huddersfield in 2016. So that was the kind of the next stage, like, do I do an MA and do sort of research based, or do I want to stick to something that's very much practice based? Because I love being on the shop floor. It's like, management doesn't bother me, I just want to be with the children, making a difference with the children. So the EYTS was the natural progression to that. And I managed to do some training with Anna F. Grave at the Early Excellence Centre, which is about a mile up the road from where I live, so it's very, very close. I've done the in the moment planning, and that kind of sowed the seed of like, yes, this is what I want to do. I don't want to have to plan 6 weeks ahead around aliens love underpants, and can we cut out pants? Can we colour in pants? Can we make a spaceship? Can we do more tinfoil thing? How much tinfoil can you put on the shopping list, kind of thing? And it was one lunchtime, and the children, we used to sit and have our lunch with the children. And I said, oh, at the weekend, I went on a bear hunt with my auntie. And I said, oh, what did you do? And the conversation flowed. Another little boy said, can we go on a bear hunt? So I was like, well, yeah, of course we can. So I just grabbed what was next to me, and it had to be a whiteboard. I said, what do we need then? And the children came up with a list of, you know, they need a backpack. They need, I think it was not necklaces, which were binoculars, telescopes, sausages, obviously.
Of course.
So they came up with this list. So it was like, okay, fine, after lunch, we'll go out. We had a big field behind where our setting was. And we, by sheer chance, we had like the biggest life-size cuddly bear in our setting that one of the staff had brought in, as you do, that you accumulate things. So over lunchtime, I did the risk assessment, this bear up to the park, and hoped in the meantime that none of the locals went to walk their dogs. They'd wonder what on earth was going on up there. We left the staff and said, well, if you want to get some things out for map drawing or some junk modelling, you know, can you sort of move on with that whilst I'm doing this risk assessment? And they were mark making and doing maps and making binoculars and getting their backpacks and getting first aid kits and everything else together. And we took a group, I think we took all of them actually, up onto the field, and they just started chanting the bear hunt as they were going round and using their binoculars. And straight away some children just ran off and they weren't interested, but then a couple of them spotted the bear and just ran straight over to it. One little girl, she'd got our nursery camera, so she became the expedition photographer, and there are about 30 pictures of feet and grass, like there is. And then they were like, oh, can the bear go on the slide, and can he go on the playground? And it was like, well, yeah, if you can get him there, then absolutely. So a whole team of them had to work together, to sort of collaborate to work out how they could carry him, and they needed a little bit to get him on the slide, but he came down the slide. And then another little girl sat, and she had a first aid kit, and she had the camera. And I said, what are you doing? I'm eating my sausages, because it was her idea. So she still remembered that sausages were part of her play experience.
Yeah.
So we kind of developed that with her, and we sat and we had a picnic with her sausages. And that was the moment when I sort of went back and reflected on it as part of the university course. It was like, oh my gosh, this is how it could be. I could never have planned for that. You can plan for the bear hunt. You could have planned to do something like that. You could have made telescopes, you could have made, but I would never plan to put a bear on a slide.
But they, you know? Do you feel they were more engaged because it was their input and it was their interests were pulled into it?
Absolutely, and showing that you valued, like, by going back to the sausages, or, you know, remembering which child has said they wanted to make the binoculars. It's like, oh, you've got your binoculars, what can you see? And have we got real binoculars? What do they, you know, what do binoculars do? They make things that, you know, bigger and smaller, and all those. You could focus on each of those individual children and what they brought to the table almost. And then, you know, you could develop on that what their own interests were. Again, we had 2 to 4 year olds. Some of the little ones just wanted to play, and some of the 4 year olds were really into their sort of critical thinking and problem solving and that kind of thing. So you could differentiate within one activity, you know, you could really easily differentiate across all the age groups. So, yeah.
But this kind of light bulb moment happened whilst you were covering a lunch, but how did the rest of your team take to it when, you know, you all of a sudden went off and what must have at the time seemed like a completely crazy tangent as you're running off up the park with a giant sized teddy bear?
Yeah. they kind of knew I was a bit crazy like that anyway. They kind of knew I had these sort of whims, and but you have to be in early years, and if you're going to make it work, you have to be, you know, was it the Debbie Garvey says, you have to have someone that's irrationally crazy about you. One of the research, you know, it's those things, you have to be irrationally crazy, I think, to work in there. So I think that was part of the, you know, I think I look back on my reflection, you know, a few weeks ago, and it was a case of security net of having those plans was really comfortable, and it was the uncertainty of not having any plans. I was like, how are we possibly going to do anything and teach anything to the children? And it was getting the staff on board, and that was the hard thing because the staff had been there for X number of years, and it was a very traditional playgroup setting, and it was a case of how we're going to promote this and actually go, actually, you know what, let's just try it. And thankfully my university course was the, you know, sort of the I don't know what the word to say, actually, you know, sort of the fallback on that, with the safety net of that, to say, look, humour me, just try it. If it doesn't work, I'll hold my hand up and I'll say, do you know what? I've tried it. Don't, you know, don't regret the things that you haven't tried, kind of thing. It's just give it a go. And if it works, brilliant. We will see how the children respond. And yeah, and it just went with it. And it was just, you end up with a lot of different topics going on at once, which can be a bit confusing because you like to kind of, let's come back to aliens, or let's come back to the hungry caterpillar, or come back to bear hunt. Many topics going on, so you need those staff to understand that. But it's a case of reskilling the staff and upskilling the staff to say, this is what you can do, you do it anyway, without realizing it's just, you don't need to have that name, that in the moment planning label on it as such. You do it in that cycle, the observation, assessment, and the next step cycle, all the time, every day, in day in, day out. But because you're not looking for an outcome, which is what you had if you'd done the aliens planning 6 weeks in advance. It's week three, we've got to do paint, hand painting on, you know, pant cutout kind of things. It's, you know, and you could just go with wherever you wanted to and have that freedom to do it. So it took a while, but I think we got there in the end. So, yeah.
I think as well, it's kind of going back to that, something you were saying there, and it just made me think, you know, back to teams that I've worked with when I've made changes in, you know, way back when I was preschool room manager and stuff. And it's like, you know, you kind of turn around and stuff. Well, I'd like to make a change and we're going to do this, but we've always done it this way, is kind of one of those stockpile answers that gets flung back at you. And I think it's for you, if you're going to make that change, I think you have to be brave. You really have to put your big boy or big girl pants on and say, but we're going to give it a try, and this is what we're going to do. And I think it's about having that clear vision as well.
Yeah.
About, you know, we're going to try this, and this is how we're going to do it, and be prepared for kind of everyone coming back to you. But how do we do this, and how do we do that? And, you know, how do we observe them doing that? Observe them any way that you were doing before.
Yeah, and I'm really lucky with it. With the team that I work in now, we're a very, very, very reflective team, and we've all got lots of ideas, and we'll sort of put things forward. And eventually, it's a natural evolution. It's like, we'll try it this way, or that hasn't quite worked. Even after like an hour, you can see, or after a few minutes, you can see it's not going to work. So you tweak it a little bit, and then by the end of the week, you look back and go, actually, yeah, we're in a good place here. Or at the end of that term, or whatever, you know, it can take a day, it can take a week, it can take 6 weeks to get there. You never know, and it's naturally evolving. So thankfully, you know, we reflect an awful lot on what we do in the current setting, so it makes it work really, really well. So
I think that's one of the key things as well, is to be reflective. You don't have to, and I feel a lot of practitioners need to know beforehand what outcomes they're going to cover, and I think they hang on too tightly to this. You know, I've heard of some practitioners that say things like, oh, do you know, I don't know where I'd be without Development Matters, it's my Bible. And it's like, oh, please, that makes me feel so uncomfortable. Like, don't throw the damn thing away. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's great as just a little starting point if you're kind of writing a report or whatever. And I think, you know, it's great for that. And it was never intended. And, you know, I've been on training with Helen Moyler, and, you know, one of the writers of the original one. And even she said it was never designed to be a tick box. And I think it's getting practitioners away from the fact that you don't actually have to completely forward plan what outcomes you're going to cover. Just go back afterwards and go, well, actually, do you know what, when they were eating those sausages, they were talking about, you know, this, and you know, this event happened to them, and actually they were counting out the sausages, or you know, they were able to tell me the sausages come from the shop, or you know, or the reason they had this, or you need to cut them. You know, there's so many things that if you're thinking the right way or asking the right questions, actually you can make it fit to the outcomes that you need from EYFS.
Yeah, that's one of the things I'd like to get to, the stage where you're not doing, you know, not everyone, but a lot of people have got the online learning journeys now. So, but to upload something, you have to tick the box, which is, like you say, it's not exactly what it is designed to do. Why not tick a box? And then at the end of the week or the end of that term, if you're doing half termly reports or the end of the term, just go back and say, you know that child. If I throw a name at you and said, do you know this child? If you're a key worker, you should be able to, you know, literally say about that child without having to go, oh, actually, let me just have a look at my tablet and see where they are. You can say exactly what stage they are, whether they're secure or developing and things. So you don't need that. But like I say, there's a place for it as a reference point, and for like people that are apprentices and newer members of staff and those that aren't that confident, that kind of thing. But for those, but then you get that imbalance in settings. You get those that are 20 years into their career like us, and you get those that are, you know, 2 months into their career. So you've got
seconds.
To so you've got to, you know, there's got to be something there as a guidance, but not as a Bible, as you say.
I think as well, it's like something you just said there that kind of also pinged with me as well. If I've obviously got little light bulbs going off above my head, it's like you were saying about, you know, it's okay as a reference, but you should be able to talk about your key children. And I think that's one of the valid points that has been brought out of the new inspection framework, is that inspectors don't necessarily want to see piles and piles of learning journeys or flick through endless pages on whatever online system you're using. If you can turn around and say, oh, well, you know, if they ask you a question, why is that child playing with sausages? Yeah, I keep thinking about sausages now. Yeah. Oh, this is why, and blah, 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 blah. And you can tell a whole story about this child. That inspector will walk away very happy knowing that child is learning securely because you know them and you know where they're at and where they're going with it. You know, I think that's what they're looking for as well.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? So it's having that confidence and having, and like, see, we do it all the time anyway. So you know, you speak to any member of staff and you say, why are they doing that? And it's like, oh, because of, and that's what you need for the Ofsted justification. It's kind of, you know, we're doing it because we haven't got this great 6 weekly plan of everything else. This child is learning about this because this is the stage they're at. This child is interested in that. So we might have done a provocation, and you might have made sure that there's enough, you know, stuff in the continuous provision. You may have made sure there's enough resources out there. They can access it if they want to. You're not directing them, reading them, Billy Fisher's Interacting or Interfering again at the minute, and going back to that. And there's a difference between the adult directed, adult led, and adult and child led. And the adult directed, where they're trying to pull the child back to the outcomes the whole time. It's like, I've got to get, you know, with the development matters, I've got to get evidence, and I've got to see that they can do one more than in their maths or something like that. And you're trying to, you know, they're playing with the multi-link cubes or the loose parts, and they're like, oh, this is mummy and this is daddy. Oh yeah, but have you got one more than? And you're like, go with them. You'll get different outcomes. Mm-hmm. But you get more rich experience from that.
Do you feel as well, like, I'm going back to your bear hunt thing, you know, where you kind of took the idea from the children and then ran with, do you feel that, you know, their engagement was better? I know you said there were some children that just went off, but it wasn't for them. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something they were focused or interested in, and that's fine. But do you feel that those that were really engaged with this bear hunt really kind of, their learning was a bit richer and a bit deeper?
I think so, because I think then you really sort of dive into their experiences, and I say, you know, were they familiar with the story, where most of them are familiar with the story, but some of them, you know, they might have been to a zoo to see a real bear, so they've got that extra layer of their experience, like the bear hunt. Some of them might have been caught in a snowstorm or might have paddled in a river, so it's all those, it's building on their layers of experience and working out where they've got their experience from to bring it sort of to the table again.
It's that buzzword that went around and luckily has gone a bit quiet again, that cultural capital.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that one we whispered.
Well, that they talk about, yes. It is about that. It is about, you know, I mean, I know I did a video on the blog last year sometime about, you know, it being a suitcase, and that, you know, each child, you know, the nursery is a suitcase, and really what you're doing is, you know, each child has different, like you say, different experiences. If they've been to a zoo and seen a bear, or they paddled in a river or caught in a snowstorm, they're bringing that in, and they can talk about it, and they can describe it in a way that their peers can understand. We know what a snowstorm's like. We know what a river's like to paddle in. Yeah, we may have been to a zoo and seen a bear, or we've seen bears on TV or whatever. you know, we've got that experience, but they don't. But they're actually able to share those experiences and blend it together, which then increases those learning opportunities because they're going, oh, well, you know, Billy's seen a snowstorm and I want to know what a snowstorm's like. And it's like, okay, well, that's triggering some learning for you. Okay, well, let's go and look at snowstorms.
They take it out into the other areas of practice. Well, you find that with a recent experience that I had in my nursery, we were building towers, and one child said, oh, that's like the Eiffel Tower. You unpick about how they knew about the Eiffel Tower. And then later on, there were some children playing the Play-Doh. It was one of the same children, but a whole group of different children. And they were making towers again. And we sort of increased their vocabulary about structure and what it was made of and that kind of thing. And then it became the Ethel Tower. And then it became the Awful Tower because another child had heard Eiffel Tower. So they went outside and played with the loose. Like, I'm building the Awful Tower. We'd heard the word, but not heard it quite.
But again, there's another
child spread and ripple through the nursery. So, and then in the maths table, they were building multi-link cube towers, and at the mark making table, they got the pictures that were printed off because they'd realized that I'd been to Paris, and there's a picture of me with the Eiffel Tower, so Mrs. Collins with the Eiffel Tower, and that was amazing. So that got printed off and put in the mark making area, so children were drawing that. So this one little comment of the Eiffel Tower rippled throughout the whole nursery, and the clay came out, and I say it was in the vocabulary was then built on, and the words say structure and iron and metal, and we're for a walk in the local community to see what was tall and what the things were made of, and it just, and then parents got involved with online learning journeys, and they sent pictures of, you know, the Burj Al Arab and or Burj Khalifa and like the Rockefeller Center and the pyramids and that kind of, and obviously Blackpool Tower being in the north, a lot of people are into Blackpool. Absolutely. So a lot of children had that experience, but again, a lot of children, like I said, hadn't had that experience. So it was a case of, you know, building on that, but extending the experience for those children that hadn't had that experience as well. So yeah, it was really interesting.
So, I mean, how do you feel it's going now? Do you think everybody's kind of just rolling with it? Do you know, was it a long process to get everybody on board with it?
I think it was. I think it's still, there's still some that don't fully get the idea of sort of, it's the documenting part, and that's something that we've not struggled with, but we're freely looking at. You know, we're doing it for us. We're very confident in the staff team and the skills and the qualifications that we've got to justify it for Ofsted. But there's still that little in the back of your mind, it's like, what do Ofsted want to see? And you're like, it's all there. We've got a learning journey, like a scrapbook wall. So if something becomes a sustained interest, we'll put some pictures on there. And then if it develops into something else, we'll put an arrow and show how it's evolved. And then it might end up being something, you know, they've played in the mud, then they do dinosaurs and it becomes a kitchen. So it's the same kind of thread, but it's also a very different ending point. And then that goes into a big flip book. So we've got that there as evidence. But there's still that part of, you know, do we need to record the impact? Do we need to record the intention? But then if you're recording an intention, you're going back to an objective, which is not about the, you know, the in the moment planning, because if you've got that in the back of your mind, you're undoing what you're, you know, the free flow that you're trying to create. So it's really hard, but like I say, you can reflect too much sometime and get yourself caught around and
forget where you're going.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, I'm kind of trying to think now what sort of things you would do, you know, what sort of topics have the children come up with, you know, you started with Bear Hunt, but where did it go after that? It's like, you know, that kind of mystery journey. Where did it take you next?
Yeah, well, after we finished the Bear Hunt, the day after we did a sensory tray, because we knew they were interested in it. So again, it's that kind of, that adult led to a point where you're setting an activity up, but then letting the children go with it. So we went out and collected some mud and some water and some big grass, and the children kind of made their own sensory tray. But then one of the members of staff sat there and she was just sort of flipping, she made like a catapult and she was flipping stuff, and the children were like, ooh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, this sensory tray for Bear Hunt became this great huge catapult fest, and things were going across the nursery everywhere else. There's a whole load of resources that were flying here, there and everywhere. But then we upscaled that and took that outside, and that become, so from, you know, literally in 2 days worth, it went from Bear Hunt to being catapults and levers and engineering and that kind of thing. And Bear Hunt kind of went very quiet very quickly. Some of the children sort of still referred back to it when they got the book out. They're, oh, I remember when we did this, and they kind of went back to drawing maps. So it is still festering there, but it never kind of went as a big topic. But the next one that went on from that was the pumpkin soup. It was autumn time, so it was coming up for Halloween, and we had one of the girls brought in a massive big pumpkin they kind of did a similar thing. So, well, let's set up an activity, like it was Gloop, it was Messy Gloop, and we're going to make pumpkin soup. And it was the day that we had Ofsted in. It's the day of my 40th birthday. We had the phone call. I was up in the setting till 11 o'clock at night on my 40th birthday. So it's happy birthday, me.
Yes, happy birthday.
Yeah, so the next day we had Ofsted in, and we were doing pumpkin soup, and the children spent 90 minutes playing with this Gloop and making it more orange and sort of massaging this pumpkin. And then the inspector walked in and went to shake hands, and I was like, I want to shake your hands, however, and I was like covered in orange cornflour. I was like, well, at least it proves I'm committed to the cause anyway.
Absolutely, so, definitely.
Yeah, but I mean, again, that one just kind of rolled on. You know, you get all the maths in there, you get your capacity, you get your full and empty, but you've got the sensory stuff for the younger end, and then you had mark making in there. So if I'd have set out with an intention, we would never have got that rich experience from everything else. If it had just set up as a messy mark making activity for those that were getting ready for school, we wouldn't have got all the other stuff, and the children naturally got the maths and the capacity and the soup out of it and that kind of thing, and then that went into more messy activities, and again that one kind of fizzled out fairly quickly, but you've got the capability to keep it going if you need to. So
it's like you're saying there as well, it's like, okay, Bear Hunt fizzled out after a couple of days or whatever, but then you were saying that the children would pick up the book and then revisit bit. But then that's part of it as well, it's like when they're ready, they're like, oh, do you remember we made maps, and then go back to that. And then it's them increasing, going to their next level. And it's like, if you're observing, there is that kind of bit where sometimes as practitioners, we're just right on them straight away instead of actually standing back and watching. And I think there's I was talking to Greg Bottrell as well, and he was saying it is also our role to actually stand back and not jump in all the time and, you know, and see where it goes. And if we need to kind of just pass something down to them and say, look, there you go, and then stand back and let them at it. And I think, you know, like you're saying, is that they'll revisit as well when they're ready.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point, because I think that's as big a skill as actually knowing how to talk to the children, how to interact with the children. It's that not interfering side, because you know, you can spoil play very, very quickly by just going, right, and as Greg would say, you know, the adult world and the children's world, isn't it, is very much into that adult world mentality, and it's like, well, you could make that into that, and they're like, no, it's
not where we were going with this.
It was dinosaur stew, and you're like, oh, I thought it was an ice cream, and it's like, and that just completely shuts down the play. Just standing back and with the face, you know, just be there, and just, you don't have to, you also feel guilty because you think, well, you know, am I being judged? My manager watching me, or is somebody else watching me? Another member of staff, are they watching me thinking, oh, what's she doing? It's like, oh, I've got a handle on this. I'm just watching. I'm just taking it all in to see, you know, are they meeting their next steps intrinsically? Are they doing it? And also, I saw that they could do that. Let's move that indoors or move it outdoors, and let's try something to help them move themselves on. But they've got that, you know, that ability already. They've demonstrated that they're keen to do it, rather than me going, oh, well, let's all do some woodwork. It's like, if they're banging around, it's like, then you can get the woodwork out and build on that skill. Or if they're making loose parts things, you can downsize it or upsize it and work with the individual children. So yeah, observing and I say just being quiet and just watching is a big skill to have, and a lot of people don't seem to do that because they feel like they're being watched, they've got to teach all the time, and actually you can be just watching. And
I think the thing is as well is to trust the children more, that actually they will learn in something they're interested in their own time. You can't rush their learning.
No, absolutely not. No, they'll do it when they're ready, and that's all the thing about, you know, being school ready, isn't it? That horrible phrase. And we'd have been right in the thick of now, when we're coming up in this last month of the term, and let's be school ready and let's get them ready to do this. And it's like, they'll do it when they're ready. They'll pick up a pen when they're ready. It's like, you know, I've got children and I've got a very reluctant writer. And he didn't write to Lose in Key Stage 1, but we went on holiday and he wrote a diary the day to write his diary, and that was what really was his light bulb moment for, you know, for writing. He didn't want to write when he was told to write. He was happy to play in the workshop and communicate via junk modelling as his testament to the top of his wardrobe at the moment, still, you know, however many years on after reception, he won't throw it all away. But you know, there's something that needed to make that spark, and that diary writing on holiday when there was no pressure, there was no teacher, he wanted to do it for himself. And then all of a sudden he realised that he could do it. So
I think that's kind of key to in the moment planning as well. They'll do it for themselves when they're ready.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much. It's been an absolute joy to talk to you.
It's been really fun. Thank you.
It's been interesting to kind of, I totally get your light bulb moment, because some great conversations happen with the children and you're just like, okay, this is what they want. Let's run with it. So yeah. It's brilliant to kind of see that journey that you've got ongoing. It's never going to end completely. It'll always be an ongoing journey, but brilliant. Sarah, thank you so much.
No, it's been lovely. Thank you very much for having me.